Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Is Islam a dangerous religion? And how should we as Christians talk about it anyway? Is it a matter of political correctness? Is it a matter of some kind of spiritual or theological etiquette? Or how do we tell the truth? I mean, that is the big question. That's what brought me to the O'Reilly Factor on Friday night. Interesting conversation I had there with Bill O'Reilly. We'll be talking about that, playing a few clips from it. It was good to be on the program. He was very respectful. We had a good exchange of ideas. But, you know, he really got to one of the big questions that all of us are going to face. Certainly Christian leaders, pastors, but it's really true for all Christians. We're going to have to deal with the question, how do we talk about Islam? And especially with the background of the war on terror and other issues, it's not just a hypothetical issue. First, a review of some issues in the news, and one of them directly tied to this question. There's a news report out today from USA Today that a man in Afghanistan is being prosecuted in a court in Kabul, that's the capital of that country, and could be sentenced to death after being charged with converting from Islam to Christianity. Under Afghanistan's Islamic Sharia laws, that's the Quranic law, it is an executable crime. It is a death penalty crime to convert from Islam to Christianity. Reading from USA Today, the trial highlights a struggle between religious conservatives and reformists over what shape Islam will take here 4 years after the ouster of the Islamic fundamentalist Taliban regime. The defendant, Abdul Rahman, age 41, was arrested last month after his family accused him of becoming a Christian. According to Judge Ansharullah Mawaziza, Rahman was charged with rejecting Islam. His trial started Thursday. Now, this gets right to the heart of the question, doesn't it? I mean, first of all, you have in this news story that was published in USA Today the fact that 4 years ago, the Islamic fundamentalist Taliban regime was ousted. Well, how do you describe the regime that is now in power if it is going to allow a man to be put on trial for his life simply for converting to Christianity? It looks like the exchange of one form of radical Islam for another. And how are we going to talk about this? Are we supposed to use etiquette by saying that Islam is not a dangerous religion, is not a dangerous faith? Are we supposed to speak honestly about issues related to salvation and all the rest? Well, we'll get to those questions in just a moment. First, a question again about how wide is the divide in America. This is an ongoing question. We have this cultural debate in this country over deep moral and worldview issues. We have it called by some persons a culture war, by others a lesser conflict. But every once in a while, something happens that really brings this into relief. And it really helps us to see, you know, how this lays out as an issue and how America is divided. Now, we sometimes talk about the map being divided between red states and blue states, but we know that within all of those states, there are people that disagree on these issues. That's true in South Dakota. You'll remember that South Dakota has now passed a law, both chambers of its legislature. It's now signed into law by the governor that prevents and makes illegal all abortions except those to save the medical life of the mother, to save the physical life of the mother. South Dakota Governor Mike Rounds signed that law into effect just a few days ago. But in the coverage in Der Spiegel, that is Germany's equivalent of Time magazine, in Der Spiegel, there was an interesting analysis published for Germans about what's going on in America. And in the course of this report, Der Spiegel interviewed Thelma Underberg, who is director of the regional pro-choice movement there in South Dakota. Now, this is what she had to say. For her, she says that professional and economic equal opportunity and a woman's right to choose are inextricably linked. In other words, she says the whole cause of abortion is about equalizing women's rights. And she's saying here, and we need to hear, this is the argument she's making, that equal economic opportunity, equal professional opportunity can only be ensured if women have an absolute control over the reproductive process. What does she mean? She says that women basically have a liability over against men. Men do not get pregnant, therefore their pregnancies do not interfere with their careers. Women do get pregnant, and it's unfair that their pregnancies could in some way impede their professional development or their economic income. So she says in order to equalize this, we have to have abortion. Now, what's interesting is she is very clear about the fact that in 1973, she thought it was all over. She says, and I quote, "We thought we had won when Roe v. Wade was handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1973. Now, I'm reading from Der Spiegel. Now, sitting in her windowless office, she says that she doesn't understand the world anymore. The 74-year-old has three children, four grandchildren, and two great-grandchildren, and she is active in her church. Yet while she outwardly resembles her opponents in the pro-life camp, she refuses to speak with them. Quote, you might as well be talking to a wall, end quote, she says. Now, there are two things of vital importance there. That's why I posted that news story to my weblog at albertmuller.com. That's also why I'm bringing it up here. Number one, I want you to hear, in the very voice of some of those who were pushing for abortion rights as early as the 1970s, right up to the Roe v. Wade decision, I wanted you to hear their rationale, because you'll notice how this rationale has changed over time. The rationale that Ms. Underberg still holds to is that this is about economic empowerment. It's about equalizing the professional abilities of men and women and their capacities to go on to professional advancement and economic income. But I also want you to note that she says, you can't talk about this. In other words, it is an absolute for her. There is no compromise. There's no climbing down from abortion for any reason at any time, so long as a woman thinks it's in her best interest, economic, career, or otherwise. And when people ask you, why is the abortion issue so difficult? Why is finding middle ground so very, very difficult? Just remember Thelma Underberg and remember these statements uttered by a woman who's been at this a long time there in South Dakota. You know, the treason of the clerks is an old French expression that has to go back to the fact that it seems like that many societies are undone by their own intellectuals. And that certainly is the case in terms of liberal Western societies. And in the United States, with the death now of Edward Said and Susan Sontag, the main intellectual on the left is Noam Chomsky, retired now from teaching at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, a professor of linguistics and one who is credited with many great breakthrough theories in terms of linguistics. But he is so far out on the far left, it's almost difficult to exaggerate. It's almost impossible to exaggerate how far he is out there. So far as he sees it, America is the cause of all problems around the world, and America has been the cause of such problems for 50 years. He's against global calls for democracy. He says that it's wrong, it's hypocritical for the United States to campaign on human rights. He thinks the United States, in terms of its commitment to capitalism, is simply wrong. He's against capitalism. He's a radical socialist. He believes in confiscatory taxation. He believes in taking money from the rich and giving it to the poor, except when it's his money. Peter Schweitzer, writing in the Hoover Digest, has done a great job of describing this man's hypocrisy. Let me just quote to you from his article published in this edition of the Hoover Digest. He says, one of the most persistent themes in Noam Chomsky's work has been class warfare. He has frequently lashed out against the massive use of tax havens to shift the burden to the general population and away from the rich, and criticized the concentration of wealth in trusts by the wealthiest 1%. He goes on and says, but trust can't be all bad. After all, Chomsky, with a net worth of $2 million, decided to create one for himself. A few years back, he went to Boston's venerable white shoe law firm, Palmer and Dodge, and with the help of a tax attorney specializing in income tax planning, set up an irrevocable trust to protect his assets from Uncle Sam. He named his tax attorney, and Mr. Schweitzer writes in parenthesis, every socialist radical needs one, and a daughter as trustees. To the Diane Chomsky Irrevocable Trust, named for another daughter, he has assigned the copyright of several of his books, including multiple international editions. Mr. Schweitzer makes a very persuasive case. Here you have an intellectual, a man of the left, with radical economic theories who believes in them for everyone but himself. As a matter of fact, he is an ardent opponent of the American capitalism and of American corporations, and yet it turns out that he has been investing in them for years. He has chosen himself to put his own retirement savings in these blue-chip stocks that are the very companies that he opposes in the very system that he condemns. Now, this just reminds me of Peter Singer at Princeton University, who you'll remember has been writing for a long time with his radical theory suggesting that, for instance, the old have a duty to die and that we shouldn't spend money on the elderly when they reach the end of life. And instead, we should give that money to the poor. We should let the old die. And yet his own mother was in a nursing home. You know, you see, the hypocrisy comes down when you say it's right for everyone else, but not for me. Now, hypocrisy is ugly wherever it's found, and a lack of intellectual consistency can be found on both the right and the left. It's not just on the left, but it does seem to be that those with the most radical economic theories and the most radical theories about the nature of human dignity, that is, the lack of human dignity, are the very people who, just in the course of living out normal human lives and making the same kind of decisions the rest of us have to make, will end up deciding pretty much what the rest of us decide. Now, that is hypocrisy, any way you want to cut it. Rarely do you see it in such a clarified form as this. Now, I would argue that Noam Chomsky has a right to set up such a trust. He has a right to preserve the income he's made and to give it to his children and his grandchildren. He just shouldn't have any more right to do that than the rest of us. And he shouldn't have the right to say everyone else shouldn't do as he does. We're right back to talk about Islam. Is it a threat or not? How do we talk about it? Coast to coast, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. It was interesting Friday night. It's always good to have a conversation with Bill O'Reilly, a very interesting person, and one who really gets to many of the most important issues of the day. That's what makes his show interesting. Well, that's why a lot of people watch, by the millions, as a matter of fact, from whom I've heard quite a few of you who saw the program on Friday night and wanted to talk about it. That's good. That's why we decided we would talk about it here. The lines are open. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Just for those of you who may not have had an opportunity to see it, let me just kind of review with you what the conversation was about. It turns out that in the preceding several days, Franklin Graham, the son of evangelist Billy Graham, and Pat Robertson, head of the CBN network and the 700 Club host, had made statements critical of Islam. Now, just so you know what they said, let's just hear those clips so that you hear these men speaking themselves. First, we'll hear Pat Robertson and then Franklin Graham.
These people are crazed fanatics, and I want to say it now. I believe it's motivated by demonic power. It is satanic, and it's time we recognize what we're dealing with.
I've been working in Muslim countries now for, 40 years or more. So I know about Islam. If people think Islam is such a wonderful religion, just go to Saudi Arabia and make it your home. Just live there. If you think Islam is such a wonderful religion, I mean, go and live under the Taliban somewhere.
Now, wasn't it interesting that in our top segment just today, we were looking at the fact that a man in Afghanistan is now coming into a court in Kabul to be charged at penalty of his life for converting to Christianity? Because under Sharia law, the Muslim law, Islamic law, it's forbidden. It is a death penalty case. And so that certainly lends a lot of credence to what Franklin Graham was saying here. But what Mr. O'Reilly wanted to know from me is whether I would defend these two men in making these statements. And you got to know that's a lot of pressure. It really is. It's a lot of pressure because you know that a lot of people out there who are committed to political correctness are thinking only an idiot, only an intolerant person would say such things. Only someone who doesn't care about the public relations aspects would be so bold as to defend Franklin Graham and Pat Robertson. And by the way, why would they make such statements in the first place? They're two very intelligent men. Now, let me speak with candor. I have criticized Pat Robertson for some really unfortunate things he said. And I've done so on this program. I've done so on the record. I don't have any hesitation to criticize when a Christian leader says something that's indefensible. But when I heard, Pat Robertson make this statement, and by the way, the context of this was speaking in terms of the Muslim riots and the extremism, the death threats in the wake of the controversy over the cartoons about Muhammad in Europe, when he goes on and says these are crazed fanatics, and of course he wasn't speaking of all Muslims, he was speaking of those Muslims, and he went on and he said he believes that this kind of extremism is motivated by demonic power, it's satanic, and it's time we recognize what we're dealing with. You know, there are plenty of people out there in the world who don't believe that any reasonable, rational person believes in satanic power or demonic power in the first place, much less that you would ascribe that to a belief system. And I came back on, and you'll hear what I had to say in just a moment, but let me just tell you in advance, I came on to say that any belief system that keeps persons from seeing the truth, keeps them from coming to Christ, is demonic in the core, and I have biblical authority on that. That's what the Apostle Paul said. Jesus himself spoke of those who oppose the gospel in terms of being under the power of demons. And the Apostle Paul said that if this gospel is not evident and not seen, not understood, it's because these people have had their minds veiled, clouded, by the spirit of the age. He spoke of spiritual warfare, saying we fight not against flesh and blood, but precisely against demons and spirits and all the rest. So Pat Robertson is really, I want to say this emphatically, he was on sound biblical ground. He was speaking out of deep Christian conviction when he said this. But Mr. O'Reilly fears that this is really not a good thing to be said in public because it endangers Arab cooperation in the war on terror. Mr. O'Reilly's point is that we need moderate Muslims to stand with us, and they're not likely to stand with us with this kind of criticism of Islam. Franklin Graham, again, another man here in whom I have great respect, and Franklin Graham has been consistent on this, going back to right after 9/11 when he made some very bold comments, and when he says, if you think Islam is such a wonderful religion, just go and live in a place under Islamic law and then report back. Now, you know, there's some people who would say, that wasn't the kindest thing to be said. Well, sometimes the truth doesn't sound kind, but the lie is never kind. Now, let me just tell you how I responded here to Mr. O'Reilly. You'll hear this. Guys, run clip 3.
I have to say, as a Christian, that I believe that any belief system, any worldview, whether it's Zen Buddhism or Hinduism or dialectical materialism, for that matter, Marxism, that keeps persons captive and keeps them from coming to faith in the Lord Jesus Christ, yes, is a demonstration of satanic power.
Well, I mean, I just can't see it any other way. Maybe you can help me to see it some other way if you think I'm wrong, but I just can't see it any other way. I think that's exactly how the apostles would have responded to this. And go ahead and run clip number 4.
Can you point to me in Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John one time when Jesus looked at a Jew and said, you're in a demonic religion?
Well, he certainly never called Judaism, he was himself a Jew, a demonic religion. He did speak of persons, however, being under demonic possession and speaking on behalf of the devil rather than on behalf of his father.
I didn't hear him say the Romans were demonic, and they, of course, were polytheists, worshiping whatever God.
You're making a good point. You're making a good point. I don't think either one of these men was saying that these people are demonic, but rather that the belief system is.
You know, that's an interesting distinction, isn't it? You know, there are persons who are in the thrall of worldviews that I believe are indeed representations of the demonic, who aren't themselves intentionally giving themselves to the demonic. I don't doubt the sincerity of these people for a moment. To the contrary, I think you must be very sincere in order to do some of the things these persons do, even forfeiting their lives. I don't doubt the sincerity of a suicide bomber. But I have to say, I think we're simply wrong to suggest that it isn't something that is deeply involved in spiritual warfare. Now, again, I want to give Mr. O'Reilly's argument full due here. He's saying that even if these things are true, which he doesn't concede, by the way, but he was respectful, even if these things are true, they should not be said in public because our overarching goal right now is to win the war on terror. And when you win the war on terror, in order to win the war on terror, you're going to have the cooperation of moderate Muslims who will be offended by such statements. Let me just give you, Mr. O'Reilly very courteously gave me the final word, and I want you to hear what that final word was.
I think that both Pat Robertson and Franklin Graham care deeply about this country, but I honestly believe that one of the reasons I admire them is that they think even more of the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ.
Now, again, I appreciate that fact. He gave me the last word, and he was very fair and honest in that. It was an issue on which we disagreed. But let me just be clear about that last word. That last word comes down to this. There is something even more important than the war on terror. For a Christian theologian, for a Christian pastor, for a Christian, there just has to be something greater than the war on terror. I don't minimize that issue at all. But I just don't think we can avoid saying the truth, telling the truth about a question of this importance. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. It's your opportunity to join the conversation. Who's right here? What should we say about Islam? Now, the political correctness band would come by to play their tune to tell us just speak of those who would do such things as extremists and suggest that the vast majority of Muslims can pretty much get along with the rest of us. When we come back, I'm going to tell you why that's not true. It is not true to suggest that every single Muslim is about to become a suicide bomber. That's just not true at all. It's not true that they're about to join the Taliban or Al-Qaeda. It is true that every single Muslim has the Muslim responsibility under the Quran to seek to bring the entire world under Quranic rule. And that's not going to happen easily, folks. The phone number, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK, coast to coast. You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're trying to take seriously this question, just how should Christians speak about Islam? This isn't a problem if you're a liberal. It really isn't, because if you believe the question really isn't all that important about truth, then everything is reduced to etiquette. It's just a social compact. I won't say anything bad about your religion if you won't say anything about mine, and since it really doesn't matter all that much anyway, since we're all headed to the same place, and since I don't believe, the liberal would say, that if you don't know Christ, you're destined for hell, and if I'm not willing to say that Jesus Christ is the only way of salvation, and if I think that sincerity is the only key, then I could just encourage you to be sincere. It's like one liberal churchman I saw, he wrote in a book not too many years ago, he said, my job as a Christian is to make sure that Jews are good Jews, and Muslims are good Muslims, and Buddhists are good Buddhists, to which I say, good on their way to hell? You know, what sense does this make? Sincerity is not the gospel. Now, one must sincerely come to faith in Christ, but sincerely believing in the wrong thing is sincerely to find yourself without any hope of salvation. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Should the war on terror in the aftermath of 9/11, our responsibilities around the world, mean that we shouldn't speak about these things publicly? Well, how can we speak about them privately, even not publicly? That's the big question. Let's go to Mark calling from Venice, Florida, listening on XM170. Mark, your turn.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Glad to hear from you. What do you think?
Well, I think that this is a false religion in the world, and Christians should speak up against it. And I think that if they went back and studied Mohammedism, they would find out that Mohammed himself was a caravan robber and a pedophile because he married a 14-year-old girl. And I think people, if they knew that, even the Muslims, if they knew that that was the truth, they wouldn't be worshiping somebody like that.
Okay. Well, Mark, I appreciate your call. You know, this is where together we got to do some real careful thinking here. I have defended a good friend of mine, a great Christian leader, for describing Muhammad as a demon-possessed pedophile. And it's because I believe you put all the evidence together that, you know, there is a great moral question there. I believe the demon-possessed part's the most important part. Which, by the way, Muhammad has a strange section in the Quran in which he mentions something like that. I just want to be real careful to say that I think you can find characters in the Bible that also married very, very young girls, because the marriageable age was very, very young. You had betrothal and all the rest. So I don't want to put too much accent on that, Mark. I think you'll understand that, because I think we need to be real careful that we don't play a double standard here and hold, for instance, Muhammad to a standard. We wouldn't hold a biblical patriarch. We don't, for instance, even know how old many of the most esteemed women in the Bible were when they were married, because in that Semitic culture, they married quite young, and also in desert and nomadic cultures, that was quite common. But, Mark, you're onto something very important here. When you talk about the moral behavior of Muhammad, when it comes, for instance, to his ends justify the means morality, which is very clear in the Quran. And, by the way, the Quran and classical Muslim thought separates the world into two different spheres. Dar al-Islam, which is the house of Islam, that's where Muslims rule, and Dar al-Harb, which is the house of war, where all Muslims are obligated to seek to bring the society under Muslim rule. One of the realities we have to face is that all across even the West, especially Western Europe, there are enclaves now that are under Quranic rule, even in nations such as the Netherlands, where the police will not go into some neighborhoods in Amsterdam because they're basically under Quranic rule. They're basically being ruled as Islamic millets, is what they call it. And the same thing is true in Paris. That's part of the background with the riots in Paris a few months ago and all the rest. So we have to be very, very clear. Mark, I appreciate your conviction. And what I sense in what you had to say there is that your central concern with Islam is that it entraps persons from coming to faith in Christ. Would that be fair?
That's exactly correct. Exactly correct.
Well, I appreciate your call. It's always good to hear from Venice, Florida. Let's go to St. Petersburg. Neighbor there, Elka, is listening on WTBN. Go ahead, Elka.
Yes, hi. I just got a little bit of what you guys were talking about, but it just irked me a little bit to hear that we have to apologize for somebody saying that these people are acting as if they're under some kind of a demonic, you know, spell. Why are we so afraid to say that? They don't have any qualms about wiping out the West, and, you know, if they could. And we seem to be succumbing to them and their needs and their wants and opening up schools and just I hate the feeling of us having not to be able to stand up. We're a strong country. We're supposed to be standing up for our Christian values. And, you know, when somebody else goes and murders five people, they're said, you know, nobody talks about the fact that they are under demonic. They are under demonic spell. And why are we so afraid to speak of that? I don't understand that. It blows me away.
Well, Elka, I think it's fair to say you're not afraid to speak. And I appreciate your call and your willingness to speak forthrightly. And I do think it's a time to speak candidly. That's why I went on the O'Reilly Factor to make those comments. I think we have to be very careful. And we know that persons have done awful things in the name of Christianity. The question is, what is the inner logic of this faith? And what we should see is that it's violence. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking about Islam. How should we talk about it, as a matter of fact? How should Christians speak honestly and forthrightly about the challenge of Islam with the background of the war on terror, 9/11, and all the rest? What is our responsibility to try not to incite violence? What is our responsibility to speak honestly? But more than that, what's our responsibility just to tell the truth? Let's go to Beverly, calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Beverly.
Hi. Islam is a violent-based religion, and as such, it even devalues the value of life. It devalues, especially if weapons has no value to them. They're violent, and although some people may not be extreme, still the religion in and of itself has a violent basis and rewards violence. Islamic people, if they really follow the Quran, are told to kill infidels. And an infidel is anyone who does not believe what they believe.
Beverly, I appreciate your call. You know, it seems to me that the inner logic of Islam that is of greatest concern about this is the fact that the entire world is to be brought under Quranic rule. I mean, let's face it, Islam is a form of works righteousness. The very word Islam means obedience and or submission. And it is submission to a law. And it is obedience to certain rituals and, of course, to all that is set down in the Quran. And there's a lot set down in the Quran in terms of law. And this is where Franklin Graham was saying. He says, listen, if you think this is just a wonderful religion, just go to Saudi Arabia and live there. Make your home there, he said, and then tell us about it. Some of the penalties for different crimes. It wasn't too long ago, a number of years ago, that a Saudi Arabian princess was beheaded for adultery. I mean, there are just all kinds of things that go on there that, your average liberal Westerner just doesn't want to even think about, much less the fact that here we're supposed to be the land of freedom. We're supposed to be honoring freedom and human rights. And just at the beginning of the program, I just read to you about the death penalty being very much a factor in a trial of a man for converting to Christianity being tried in Afghanistan, where the United States went and spent American lives to recapture that territory, to oust the Taliban, and to turn that country into a place that would honor rather than to trounce upon human rights. Obviously, there's a lot of work there to be done. How do we speak about Islam? You know, President Bush has been criticized a great deal for speaking of Islam as a quote, religion of peace. And I think a lot of that is fair. I think there's some fair criticism there because it is a land of peace. It is a religion of peace only after the installation of Quranic rule. That's the side the peace is on. It's after the imposition of Quranic rule. And so to call it a religion of peace up front, I think just flies in the face of what we see around the world. Let's go to Tyrone, calling from Palm Harbor, Florida, listening on WTVN. Tyrone, your turn.
Hey, how are you doing? I was calling because I have read portions of the Quran, just like the lady before me who was speaking. The Quran is adamant. It mandates the persecution and often the death of anybody who will not convert to Islam. And as the case in Afghanistan, those who leave Islam. These people who are, we are politically correct calling extremists, are actually fundamentalists. These are people who are following the Quran as intended. So how should we speak about it? Well, I mean, Paul says to speak in love, and we should always speak in love. but we should also speak truthfully. And the truth is Islam is a religion that is eschatologically based, and that is everything they do in violence is for the purpose of fulfilling that eschatology. I mean, that's their impetus.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I appreciate your call, Tyrone. To be clear so that all our listeners know what you're talking about, eschatology is the doctrine of last things, and this has to do with how the world comes to an end, which, by the way, little historic footnote here, is one of the theories behind what's going on with President Ahmadinejad in Iran, who is a Shiite and may hold to the idea of the 12th caliphate, which has to do with the eschaton and the end of all things. And there's some who suggest that he may think himself the 12th caliph, follower of Muhammad, in which case they may be trying to bring on with this nuclear effort and all the rest, the kind of war that would end with Muslim domination, the establishment of the rule of Islam through the 12th caliphate. Now, I don't know if that's where President Ahmadinejad is or not, but there are enough danger signs there that the eschatological point Tyrone made is well verified. That is a particular teaching of Shiite Islam over against the Sunni version of Islam. And a lot of the fighting right now going on in Iraq is between the Shiites and the Sunnis, which may be a lot hotter even than the fight between Muslims and non-Muslims in that part of the world. Let's go to David calling from Phoenix, Arizona, listening on XM170. Go ahead, David.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I really appreciate your show, and more importantly, I appreciate your honesty as well as your truthfulness. I appreciate you defending, and I appreciate the truthfulness and honesty of Pat Roberts and Franklin Graham. It's important that we don't have to be tolerant of that. More importantly, I think it's considerably biblical that whether it's a religion of Islam or Mormons or JWs or whatever they are, if it's not Christianity, it's not biblical, and it doesn't give you salvation, and it will take you to hell. And that's the truth, and that's exactly what it says in the Bible, and I don't think we have to apologize for that.
David, let me ask you a question here. It sounds like you don't consider yourself too sophisticated to believe in spiritual warfare.
Oh, I totally believe in spiritual warfare.
Good. Well, you know, I think there are a lot of conservative Christians who don't, and I think some believe the wrong things about spiritual warfare, and they're always seeing, you know, spirits in this house or that house or territorial demons or all the rest. I think what the New Testament just straightforwardly teaches is that the spiritual warfare is over souls. It's over the gospel. Wherever the gospel is preached, there's going to be organized spiritual opposition. It was true in Ephesus. It was true in Damascus in the book of Acts. It's certainly true, you know, here as well. And I think that is the great thing. I think that's the point of Ephesians chapter 5 as well. As you move into the very conclusion of the book of Ephesians, where you very quickly end up in the theme of spiritual warfare, and that spiritual warfare is precisely the kind of encounter with the demons we're talking about here in Ephesians 6. The Apostle Paul talks about putting on the full armor of God, makes very clear that the enemies are not flesh and blood. Sometimes they can represent the enemy. We do battle with human beings, both in terms of debate and sometimes even more physical battle. But the big point is the spiritual battle. The Apostle Paul could not be more clear when he speaks about the struggle against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. I think that's pretty clear. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back. In closing minutes, we're going to try to get to Scott calling from Hagerstown, Maryland, listening on the web. Go right ahead, Scott.
Hi. Well, I was just concerned about what message was being conveyed, whether it was too inflammatory. I mean, I believe it to be the truth, but my concern is that what Jesus wanted us to convey as an evangelistic tone? Will it play in the favor of the fellow being held captive over in Afghanistan? And more important, will it build up or break down evangelistic relationships?
Well, tell me what you think. I know you're asking the questions there. Let me ask you, what do you think, Scott? I mean, how do you talk about these things without saying what has to be said? Just help me here.
Well, I think building a relationship with an individual, it may take time.
Okay, I understand that, but when someone is called, a Christian leader is called to speak about this publicly, what would you have him to say? That's the question here.
Well, not to avoid sin, but also not to avoid love.
Okay, and I don't mean to press you here. The clock's ticking on me. But, I mean, take what Franklin Graham said. Are you saying he was wrong to say that? I don't want to put words
I'm
in your
not.
Mouth.
I'm just concerned about how that will affect the trial of this man over in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
If the Muslims hear that and they are enraged about that and possibly biased at his trial.
Yeah, well, I think you're onto something there in terms of the global consequences of what any of us might have to say. And a good point to be made, Scott, in terms of our responsibility to be careful in our speech. I would point out that Jesus certainly had very tart, very clear, and what we would say by contemporary terms, judgmental things to say about those who did not come to the gospel and those who were his opponents. Obviously, you know, the old adage, you know, you win more with sugar than with vinegar, is not irrational here, and that's why we do need to show the love of Christ and speak of the love of Christ. I just think that in this time, there are real limits to how we can do that in a way that the larger world will think is nice or will think is kind. To Mr. O'Reilly, I made the point that we do need to try to think through an etiquette of how to talk about these things. I mean, for instance, I think in all honesty, if one had a Muslim move next door, a Muslim family move next door to where you live, you would not go over and take a cake and say, hello, welcome, infidels. You know, you would want to build some kind of relationship, just as what Scott's talking about here. But if you are in public, and this is the burden of Christian leadership, and that's where this all came down with Pat Robertson and with Franklin Graham. If you have the burden of Christian leadership and the camera is on you and the microphone's put in your face and you're asked to speak to these issues, you're going to have to decide right then whether you're going to tell the truth, even when the truth hurts. And I want to come back again to say I think Pat Robertson and Franklin Graham did the right thing. They didn't get to choose how they were asked the question. They had to answer the question that was asked them. I hope we all learn how to do that with faithfulness and with love. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. I'm Albert Mohler.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.